यो व्हाट इज अप माय फ्रेंड्स, वेलकम टू अनदर एपिसोड ऑफ दोस्त कास्ट। मेरा नाम है विनम्र कसाना और आज के हमारे गेस्ट का नाम है डॉक्टर यूएस अवस्थी। ही इज द मैनेजिंग डायरेक्टर एंड सीईओ ऑफ इफको, इंडियन फार्मर्स फर्टिलाइजर्स कोऑपरेटिव। फुल फॉर्म एज बीन स्पोकन। एनीवे, द रीजन आई गॉट हिम ऑन इज बिकॉज व्हेन एज एन अर्बन इंडियन आई टिपिकली थिंक अबाउट कोऑपरेटिव्स एंड अदर कंपनीज दैट वर्क विद द गवर्नमेंट, मुझे लगता है ये सब की सब लॉस बनाती होंगी कंपनीज। बट आई वाज सो सरप्राइज्ड टू फाउंड आउट that in fiscal year 2022 to 2023, IFFCO had a turnover of 62,990 crores, aur ye 50% jump tha inke last year ke revenue se. And what is even more stunning, that despite serving the masses and revolutionizing fertilizers, urea in the country, they also did a profit of 3,053 crores. If that is not stunning, I don't know what is. When I figured out the scale at which this cooperative operates, I was blown away. I figured, yaar, let's have Dr. Awasthi on the podcast. Let's at least try to understand this industry. I'm not from agriculture. I have barely seen fertilizer bags in my life. I love the land, of course. Is conversation mein, we spoke about what it is like to serve under 9 different prime ministers in the country, 36 different ministers, and never let the persuasion of politics get in the way of serving the masses and getting your fertilizers out to India and the rest of the world. So obviously we spoke about everything from IFFCO's success story, what it takes to run a company of that skill, management mantras, politicians ke saath room mein jaake, how do you make sure that you read their body language and figure out what they're thinking. There's a whole masterclass on body language, and overall, I mean, it was just awesome to meet someone who runs such a big company. And practically most Indians, when we think about India's business success story, हमारा टिपिकल रिस्पॉन्स होता है दैट स्टार्टअप और दैट प्राइवेटली लिस्टेड कंपनी और दैट पब्लिक कंपनी दैट वर्क्स इन टेक। एंड वी टिपिकली डोंट एसोसिएट एग्रीकल्चर एंड फर्टिलाइजर्स विद द काइंड ऑफ ग्लैमरस प्रॉफिट्स दैट मेनी ऑफ दिस अदर कंपनीज शो। एंड इवन दो इट डज नॉट लुक एज ग्लैमरस, एंड इवन दो द वर्ल्ड ऑफ फर्टिलाइजर्स एंड एग्रीकल्चर लुक्स वेरी अनग्लैमरस फ्रॉम द आउटसाइड, यू'ड बी वेरी सरप्राइज्ड। इट इज अ सिग्निफिकेंट कॉन्ट्रीब्यूटर टू हाउ द वर्ल्ड एंड आर कंट्री ईट्स, how our farmers make money, and how agriculture is revolutionized. Isse badhiya English nahi bol sakta is bare mein. Enough said. I think you are in for a bumper episode. The episode with Dr. U.S. Awasthi of IFFCO begins in 3, 2, 1.
U.S. Awasthi ji, bahut bahut swagat aapka mere show dost cast mein, jo hum aapke office mein shoot kar rahe hain in khoobsurat paintings ke samaksh. And obviously we'll talk about the many accolades you've achieved in your career. But we were discussing rings earlier, and I said I would ring for Saturn and I would ring for, you know, this one right here, the green emerald. I said, aapki ring kaun si? And you said there's a story behind it.
Yeah, you know, my mother was very religious. So it's a long, long time back. She got a ring made for me. And I'm the one person who never liked to wear any jewelry. So I told her I'm not going to wear it. I was, of course, very young. Then after she passed out in 1985, and this week we will find that I have learned everything from my mother. So obviously in her memory, in 85, I wore it. But she got it made much earlier than that. So that's the story. It is no astrological or any reason, but just in her remembrance. The guy is still miss her.
She must have been a wonderful lady.
Yeah, she was.
We were discussing paintings. You know, one of your colleagues said that you were the first person to start the process of buying paintings as an organization, right? It is very unique. Maine pehle kabhi nahi dekha. Usually people have paintings that are loaned to them, or, you know, people have private collections in individuals, but never organizations. Is this like a good strategy?
It's like this, you know, I belong to a family, which family of writers, journalists, and have been brought up in an atmosphere which was full of writers, journalists, musicians, sculpturists, freedom fighters, educationists, agriculturists. So it is supposed, it is also has influenced me. And so I was something out of that line. मैं थोड़ा लाइन से हट के हूँ घर में, क्योंकि मैं इंजीनियरिंग में आ गया और उसके पीछे भी मैंने बुक में लिखा है कि मैं इंजीनियरिंग में क्यों आया और क्यों मैं इंजीनियर बनना चाहता था। तो इसलिए मुझे लगता है कि मैं थोड़ा सा जो काम कर रहा होता हूँ उससे थोड़ा सा रिलैक्स होने के लिए मैंने ये सब, मेरे कुछ हॉबीज़ हैं लाइक आर्ट, लाइक इंटीरियर डेकोरेशन। ऑल द ऑफिसेज यू विल फाइंड इंटीरियर डेकोरेशन इज डन बाय मी। आई एम वेरी पर्टिकुलर अबाउट व्हाट काइंड ऑफ फर्नीचर शुड बी देयर, व्हाट काइंड ऑफ टेपेस्ट्री कलर शुड बी देयर।
रियली?
सो यू नो आई जस्ट जस्ट मैटर ऑफ मेकिंग माई माइंड समवेयर एज गोइंग टू द नेचर, हैव ब्यूटिफुल फ्लावर्स अराउंड, यू विल फाइंड बिहाइंड अवर ऑफिस यू फाइंड ब्यूटिफुल गार्डन। I take care, the bird should have the food, everybody should have something, because that is how our whole ecosystem is. And I'm very much for the environment and for the related things for that. So just a kind of, as a human being, I look at it. And then I started acquiring art, and I started acquiring art from the famous painters, so not so famous painter who became famous later on. I have been also acquiring art where I have been going and doing joint ventures. So I make sure that the people around us should know the human side of us also.
I agree. जब मैं पहली बार यहाँ अभी drive करके आ रहा था तो I thought IFFCO के अंदर बिल्कुल एकदम बहुत बड़े बड़े क्यूबिकल्स होंगे और सब कुछ एकदम ग्रे होगा, बट आई एम वेरी प्लेजेंटली सरप्राइज टू सी हाउ ब्यूटीफुल योर ऑफिस इज। सो कूडोस टू यू एंड योर आर्टिस्टिक टेस्ट। आई वांट टू मूव अवे फ्रॉम दिस पार्ट एंड स्पीक अबाउट समथिंग दैट यू आर वाइडली नोन फॉर, राइट? हम जब IFFCO का नाम सुनते हैं हम सोचते हैं इंडिया की एक बहुत बड़ी संस्था है जो सारे फार्मर्स की मदद करती है, उनके लिए उनकी जितनी हेल्प हो सकती है वो करती है, एंड इट्स ऑल्सो प्रॉफिट मेकिंग एंटिटी, राइट? विच इज अ थिंग दैट पीपल, मोस्ट पीपल डोंट रियलाइज। I want to start with an urban myth. एक बहुत सारे urban India में लोग बोलते हैं यार मुझे ये खाना नहीं खाना, इसमें ना fertilizer होगा, ठीक है? You often hear that, right? And because it's very like, it's said by citizens who don't know about agriculture or fertilizers, right? It's a myth that's propagated across WhatsApp, wherever else. How much of that is true? And what is the real purpose of using fertilizers in our food?
You see, it's always there that majority of time our people are knowing only half truth. If you go back in 60s, where, you know, in this Joy of Crisis also I've written about it, that when I joined engineering in BHU, we have ever defeated by Chinese in aggression. We were importing our food grain was coming under PL480 scheme as aid. And so people don't know that used to be, food used to be available, wheat used to be available under ration. There used to be long queues. The things were not available. And then came Green Revolution. Then came hybrid varieties of seeds. Then came chemical fertilizers. That was that time needed. Because that time the application rate or the use of fertilizer, for 1 gram of fertilizer you could produce 17 gram of food. Today with the same fertilizer you can produce only 3 gram. So now, yes, what they say is right. Because people are also using now pesticides, people are using more chemicals, pesting up, people are really now exploiting the soil by using more of fertilizers and more of chemicals. So then, as the largest chemical producer and as the chief executive of that organization, I decided about 14 years back that now time has come to awaken people, to change people's mindset, to change what is needed to be done for our soil. And so we started Save the Soil campaign way back in 2010. But I didn't succeed much. It was a very limited success.
Why is that?
But because again, the government is still were not able to realize at that time that our soil needs correction. I don't want to do it as a kind of political, so please don't take it as a political.
Of course,
but
of course.
Sure. I have been thinking on that, and when Prime Minister Modi said from the Red Fort that we need to eradicate or reduce the chemical consumption, I realized this is the time. And so our research on alternative fertilizers became very strong, and I started working very hard. And that is how we invented nano urea and nano DAP. And now I'm bringing other nano products, where other nano products can have potential to completely eliminate chemicals from the soil.
Hmm.
And thus you will have a healthy food, you will have lesser of chemicals into our body, lesser diseases, and better environment. And I think these are kind of fertilizers which all over the world people will start using it. I find a lot of interest even in America, in Europe, in Sri Lanka, in Brazil, in Mexico, in Nepal. I find a lot of interest. Even our neighbor Pakistan, in their channel, they have started talking about agriculture channel. They have started talking about use of nano DAP and nano urea. So I was surprised. Somebody sent me a YouTube clip from Pakistan radio. Somebody in India downloaded that clip from Pakistan radio. So this is something which we succeeded, and this is indigenously designed, this is indigenously invented, and can have potential to save huge amount of foreign exchange, has potential to save huge amount of oil and natural gas which is being imported into the country. And it does not need any subsidy from the government. This price is lower than the subsidized price which the government is giving. So you can imagine, it's good for crop. It can give you better yield. It can give better product.
Huh.
Quality of product is better. It has got more fiber. It has got more of vitamins which are there. More of protein which is needed in the food grain. So it has got all those benefits, and we are further on the research on this, how to make it still better off to that tomorrow challenge of having climate change, where the temperatures are going to be higher. How to make these fertilizers to have drought resistance capabilities. So in the same nanos now we are working on that area. So this is something which has opened up a new door, a new era into agriculture.
That's very fascinating, because I think most Indians don't have a very clear idea of how the back end of agriculture works. They often see that there is a farmer in some northern state who gives them a crop and then they eat it in their homes. But you are intimately connected with not just one, but many thousands of farmers across the country. What is it something about farmers that most people tend to miss? What is it? Yeah.
You see, most of people tend to miss because that person is not really organized. And that is what I would say, urban population always, that you are lucky that they are not organized. Of course, majority of our urban population has some root connection with the village, so with the farmer. You see, what happens, look at the farmer's point of view. He does, and his family does all the hard work on the soil. His crop is depending on weather. He is dependent on seed. He is dependent on crop nutrient. He is dependent on any kind of disease which comes, how to face the disease. He is dependent on natural calamities.
Uh-huh.
How many of us in the urban area are dependent on that? We start shouting, oh, there's so much of pollution. Oh, there's so much of fog. Oh, my flight is delayed. Oh, I am 4 hours late. You know, when farmer loses one crop, he loses his whole year income. He sees his income is all dependent on that crop. And if we start realizing it, if we start knowing how do these crops are yield, if you do your in your own house, you even a small pot, if you try to grow tomatoes, how many tomatoes you expect to grow? Have you calculated the cost? What is the cost of growing 4 tomatoes or 10 tomatoes? And imagine millions of hectares of vegetable crop, they are done. They are depending upon whether they get rain or not, whether they get water or not, whether they get sunshine or not. So all these things, they are not alone. They have so much toil they do. And after that, we get our food. We should be grateful to them that whatever food you are getting is because of their hard work and hard labor. So if they are supported by us in way of either buying directly from them or making their life easier in the sense of providing them better facilities, and government is doing a lot of work on that. I may tell you that a lot of work on agriculture is happening, a lot of work on development of villages is happening, a lot of work is happening on how to provide them clean drinking water, which is available to us. And I'm sure it could change the whole system.
When it comes to farmers and their livelihoods, have we done progressively better as a consequence of using fertilizers? Are farmers able to become triple, double their yield because of using these modern techniques? Because some people often say, yaar, manure ka istamal karo, aap kyun fertilizer ka istamal kar rahe ho?
No, I would say both are necessary. When we talk of only one, that may be a problematic area. We need both. We need manure too, and we also have advocated that we must use manure because we need carbon into the soil, which is getting depleted. So manure is oriented. But not having chemical fertilizer, I think, would be difficult. So that is where the nano fertilizer comes there. So use manure, use nano fertilizer, then you don't need chemical fertilizer so much. And when I talk of nano fertilizer, it's something like this. Today, if I want to replace 90 lakh ton of urea, we need, how much we need? We need only about 35,000 ton of urea. That is where nano particle comes in nanotechnology, because we are spreading them on the leaf. We are not putting them in the soil. So when you put in the soil this solid fertilizer, the efficiency is much less and their application becomes very less. Well, the same, you know, one bottle is equivalent to one bag of urea. It's same capacity, same efficiency as one bag of urea. Where we are using it on the leaves, so the surface area has been increased, and we have reduced those solid particles into nanoparticle by 30 nanometer to 50 nanometer particle. So this is the kind of scientific difference which has been brought. And today, if space technology is using nanos, if medicine using nanotechnology, if it's an electronic telephone, is having so much power because how?
Yeah, it's a full computer now.
Now?
Yeah.
A complete computer in this. How? Because of nanotechnology. Supercomputers are what? Nanotechnologies.
Right.
So all these things happening. So agriculture also, we brought something new.
Yeah, I think most people often see agriculture as a very, very old field. That is a very outdated field. That is incapable of any modernization or transformation. But something I wanted to address is, most people see IFFCO as an organization that helps farmers. What most people don't know is that there's a lot of management and profitability. All of that is at stake. That at the end, it's still an organization that works to help the farmers, but also make profit. Yes. हम लोग assume करते हैं account बांटने में government organization loss में चल रही होगी. ऐसे सोचते हैं हम लोग.
नहीं नहीं पहली बात is not government organization. It's the autonomous cooperative organization owned by this. All the equity is available with cooperative societies.
Okay.
Which is subsidized by the farmers.
Okay.
So practically owned by the farmers. But like nanotechnology, we have introduced now drone. We have purchased 2,500 drones and going to train about 5,000 rural youth out of which at least 600 would be women, 300 operator and 300 assistant operators, which we call as paddlers. So these drones can do, can spray. In 10 minutes, 1 acre can be sprayed, which used to take the whole day. So that is where new technology is coming. So I'm using nanotechnology, nano fertilizer, and drone for agriculture spraying. So that we are bringing technology into the farmer's doorstep.
Is that how you help increase the profits? And
so we'll increase the profit, we'll also avoid accidents, we'll also get better crop, and he has spent less money. And government also is saving, exchequer is saving. And our foreign exchange is not going out. So it's win-win for all. It's when good for country, good for farmer, good for consumer. Both way. So as IFFCO, as a farmers organization, works efficiently to provide better things to farmers. At the same time, does not take off its mind out of how to make good profit. If I'm able to buy raw material at a price which is better than international price, then that adds to profit. If I'm able to borrow money at a cost which is lower than others' cost, it adds to the cost. And we also are conscious how to run our plant efficiently. Our plant runs more than 99% efficiency. So these are things which contribute to profit. And that is where a management, as a modern management practices come into place. That we have traditional farmer to be serviced through the scientific methods, through the modern methods, through the modern management techniques, and through the modern system. We have, we run our organization practically on no paper system.
Really?
So we have online, most of the things are online. And we did it long, long back. So that adds to efficiency.
But did you read a book by Howard, or did you study management professionally to understand how to run an organization of that scale?
You don't need Harvard and all that. Indian managers or Indian people like us who have gone through the village, we are better Harvard educated than Harvard educated people.
No, but how do you acquire the principles of management? Because it's such a big organization, so many people, so many stakeholders. I just saw you reading the bylaws book, right? So how do you become this top tier executive who can take decisions to ensure your company is profitable?
I may tell you something. I am the one who never read any management book. I am not the kind of person who read history. I create history. it's not many arrogance way, but this is how I've lived. I've lived in a village like that. I've been studied in universities like that. And I have practiced it in our country. I know one thing very clearly. If my fundamentals are clear, then with those clear fundamentals and clear aim, you can do anything provided you are always on the right path. That is what we have to do. We have to do the most efficient way. And technologies are coming. Acquire those technology. You see, these are not new things. If Lotus system came, we immediately acquired it. If Microsoft came, we immediately acquired it. If artificial intelligence came, we started acquiring it. So why to be behind technology? So what Harvard teaches, or what any management teaches, to be ahead of technology, to be ahead of your time. So if we practice that, we don't have to read those books, we don't have to go and study in that college.
And how do you motivate your personnel, or how do you even recruit to find the best talent in the country to make this happen?
Again, here also we are very different. First of all, we recruit through the computerized artificial intelligence test.
What?
Yes. We have no, what do you call us, in the first stage, we have zero human intervention. People apply. According to a set parameters, they are selected. They have to go and give test in the centers. After that, they have to go in another test. And after that, whatever is the requirement, 5%, I mean, 1:5 ratio people are called for interview. Then they are selected through a committee where there's a absolute independent committee, including ours, technical people. And we give preference, 3-4 preferences. First preference is rural background. Second preference is, if he is our employee's child, 5% marks preference. Then SCST quota is reserved voluntarily. OBC is reserved voluntarily. And then we select the people. And you will be surprised to know, our attrition rate is negligible. More than 90% people don't leave us. I do not say remember that. Our study is more than 95-96% people don't leave us. They like to stay here. They like to work here. Because here there is the opportunity for you to create. Whatever you want to create, you can create.
But does IFFCO, or for that matter, any fertilization organization, when you look at it from the outside, they say, "Main ek insaan hu, I do this, you know, I do interviews, I do YouTube." For me, it looks like it used to be, when I used to watch others, it'd be a fun and glamorous thing to do. Ki jao, logo se milo, study on them and interview them. From the outside, one can say, yeah, agriculture seems like a very boring field, you know. But how is it that you're able to still draw people in by so many? And how are you still interested in it after so many years of doing it?
That's the beauty of it. You know, those who come, they get in love with us. Our environment, you go and if you see, go in any township, you see, you feel like it's heaven. With all the best of the facilities, any sports, any cultural activity, anything you want to do while doing your own job, you are welcome. So it's very difficult to emulate this kind of organization. It's a matter of really, for some people really want to see what the management is. One need to really go into IFFCO to understand its culture and its ethos.
So let's talk about the culture. In your book, one of the first chapters starts with that in the 1990s, this organization was in massive losses, right? It was not doing well because of a series of bad decisions. Then you revived it using some management mantras. So Abhita, now we see it as the success story it is, but in the 90s, not all was hunky-dory. So what happened and how were you able to sort of help it bounce back?
You know, I was, before 90s, I have already worked for IFFCO for 10 years in the merit management level. And that time it was one of the topmost organizations in the country. In between, there were lot of problem within the management and with the board, and there was a lack of confidence. And I was working at that time in public sector. I went as chairman of PPCL and then was also working for RCF. And so in my heart, it was my desire to come back and revive this beautiful and glorious organization. And cooperative have lot of reach, and down to the last man into the village. And I came with a mission, and I took everybody along with me. I took union, association, brought everybody down. It was a very hard task, very hard, difficult.
Can you take me down to the brass tacks of it?
Yes.
Like, for example, when I see movies, I often see a management has to do a decision and beech mein unions khade hote hain. Unions are often portrayed as these like bad actors who don't let you do the work. But how do you rally unions behind your cause?
Yeah, because first of all, the same thing happened. They thought that we are not the same as they. I took them into confidence. I took them, make them at part of management. I said, come and be with us. There is no difference between you and us. Why do you think there should be difference? Today, the same spirit has prevailed. I said, management, officers, workers, there's no difference. We all are the same cause. I told you, you start at some place, I start at some place. But it's like this from the soil. If the tree grows, also with this the leaf grows. There cannot be any tree without the leaf.
Uh-huh.
And there cannot be any grain without having the leaf, or having the stem, or having the soil, or having unwanted element around it. So let's take all of them together and make it weave a beautiful organization. It took time, a year or two, but slowly people started realizing, and very soon they became one part. Today, if we have to take any major decision, I will consult the board, I will talk to the board, I will talk to union, I will talk to association, and then together we'll take a decision. So it's a question of taking a decision. See, what happened majority of time? We take unilateral decision. And instead of taking unilateral decision, if we take a decision with consensus.
Even if it means slower decision making?
No, it's not slow. It cannot be slow. Today's technology is available. We call can be in Zoom. See, these are technologies tool you can go. At that time, that technology was not available. So I'll invite them by air, come by air. Let's discuss here. And we'll solve the problem. So it's not the same. See, whatever communication system available, we can use the system.
Mm-hmm.
So today, I would again say this. It's a cooperation is the best form of management.
Really? As opposed to a startup or a privately owned company?
I say, anywhere. The cooperation can be anywhere. I said, when I word the cooperation, if you are under conflict, the business cannot thrive. You have to have cooperation. And that is where the cooperative comes, because cooperative lives on cooperation. After in cooperative, every fifth year we have election of the board. And why the election is needed? Because, again, it comes through the elected representative.
You mentioned unilateral decision making. I think if you look at a lot of the startups and the big companies in India, you'll find that even though there is a board, there is often a dynamic founder who takes most of the decisions, who gets everyone to rally behind him. So what would you say as the person who heads this huge organization to someone like that? Because they basically centralize a lot of decisions under themselves and the cooperative suffers or their stakeholders suffer. But because, of course, a cooperative, you keep everyone, every stakeholder in mind when you make decisions, how would you teach someone like that, someone who has a company, to start thinking like this?
You see, if you are very small, as you are, if you start up a small company, 10, 12 people, at that time, if you want to really push forward, because maybe these 10, 12 people, future is going to be dependent on that. But if you're going to run a huge organization, I think you need that kind of system by which everybody should be around you. So a small company, startup, maybe. But in a startup also, if you take just unilateral decision, I don't think you're going to survive for very long. If you take opinion of others, maybe you have a course correction.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you are missing something which others might say.
Right.
So this is my point of view that consulting and our arriving consensus is better than pushing only their idea, your own idea. Your idea might be very brilliant. Maybe one in a million could succeed maybe. But if you say majority of them will succeed, I doubt.
You have served under 9 PMs and 36 ministers, as the blurb of this book says, right? I cannot imagine to be in your shoes and to have governments change, ministers change, everyone, once they come to office, they obviously, because you had such a big organization, they obviously come to say hi to you. The pictures are clicked, you do the double handshake, all of that happens, you meet formally. And then now, a new relationship is formed. How do you keep your head straight and still focus on what you've always done? Because, I don't know what it's like to be you. So, help me understand how you've been able to keep at it while governments and ministers have changed. Has there been some pressure ever to maybe,
comply with a certain thing or do a certain policy?
You see, any government which comes, it always thinks that it needs to bring its own system, because they think they have won because the other was not doing as good. So the feeling is that whatever other has done was not good, and what I will do is good. So, I mean, it's a general feeling. I am, don't, please don't, my comment should not
of
be
course, of course.
Taken as a...
This is also for the huge
across,
number of...
Across. I'm not talking about...
We're not talking about 5 years, we're talking about...
I'm talking about 9 prime minister, 9 regime. So this is what I'm saying. And everywhere it will start on a defensive way. Because when you go and meet, of course, there's always fine in the eyes. Some kind of curiosity, or sometime maybe I would say a feeling of hostility, not very hostility, I mean a kind of not very very friendly feeling. Hostility is different, but I would say not very friendly feeling. But as you know, the politicians are one of the best actors.
Of course.
So you will not, by this their smile, you can't judge. But looking at their eyes, you can judge. So you have to watch the smile and see the eyes. And so, but slowly, slowly you start molding yourself according to what is their main agenda. And every government comes with agenda. Somebody comes with agenda that I want to expand this sector. Comedy comes an agenda, I want to expand that other sector. So you have to have a kind of flowers of all taste and all hue and cry. So that is where the art of management comes.
This is really some high level management.
Yeah.
Because what if, for example, you start a new section or a new wing that is thriving. New government comes in, we don't want to do any of it. But you realize 20% of your profits hinge on this new thing.
Yes.
Then what do you do?
Yeah, so we are quietly, don't make it a show that it is there. It is still there, but it doesn't come on the back, on the front. You work on the something new, but that still remains.
Okay.
So it's not that. And then you have to, at appropriate time, you have to explain that why that is necessary. And then it is realized. So that's why I have written the book also. That in every government I had problem, but later on every government realized that I am doing for greater good, and so then finally every government blessed the organization and me.
Incredible. I want to learn a bit more about body language from you, because you meet so many dignitaries and heads of state, right, and PMs and CMs and everyone all the time. There is something you know about how people at that level conduct themselves that perhaps I don't. And I would love to understand. You said, you know, politicians are fantastic actors. What is it, how is it that they conduct themselves body language-wise that people around them are sometimes inspired, sometimes intimidated? And if there's anything you've gleaned from those people?
You have to do some analysis about the person before going and meeting him.
Okay.
That is important. Today you are doing analysis through the different means, but I'm talking of early times when the analysis was limited to you by knowing their fellow compatriot or somebody in that system or within that office. So you always try to find out, because I'm not the one who immediately jumped to meet person. I always take some time to first and know how's the air there, or the whether it is winter or summer or raining or snow. You find the winter and then accordingly you prepare your clothing. So first of all, this is where I first try to find out what kind of person so, I'd be dealing.
It's not about being enthusiastic, it's about being practical.
Yes.
I see.
And that is where, as an engineer, as a technical person, I need to be practical.
Right. But, you know, because you've seen so many regimes, any one particular PM or any other minister strikes out to you as not what you expected at all and turned out to be like something else completely, or someone that was very hard to deal with particularly?
No, I find more or less everybody is same, more or less.
Okay.
I do not find anybody very different from others. But yes, I have, one thing I have realized that most successful person is the most hardworking person.
Really?
Yes. That is where you know, because maybe I am like that. I'm a very hardworking person.
So you're able to spot the other hard workers and you can see who's just like found their way to the top, but they're not actually working hard, someone else is?
Yes. Hardworking people are most successful and most, I would say, most successful and most tough in their thinking.
What do you mean by that? Tough and thinking?
Like that means they, if they decide there's something they want to do, they like to do. They don't like to give up in between. So that is the biggest quality, I would say, and I appreciate any leader.
Mm-hmm. Anything else that you've striked? Because, you know, most of the viewers that are going to be watching this, they will never get a chance to meet a PM or a CM or to meet those many dignitaries.
Yeah.
There must be some commonality among all of these people.
No, most of them, first of all, I told you most, the biggest commonality is hardworking.
Mm-hmm.
Second commonality is, I found, is their ability to speak the right thing at the right time.
Mm.
It's another thing. I mean, not that, just speak.
Fakey speech, unsure of what they're saying, no idea what's coming out of their mouth, just blabbering.
No. Yes, no. That's the second quality. I find those are the kind of people who are successful. And third quality I find is the people who have a very nice way of smiling when you enter. If they smile and if they smile or greet or very enthusiastically about greeting you, that's that third quality which attracts and makes them win their point.
Mm. So most people think that you, when you meet someone at that level, you should be very formal. But it's the other way around, you're saying.
Yeah.
You should meet someone as nicely and then go and negotiate however you want.
Yes.
But at least the introduction should be as warm as possible. Because we've just ended 2024 and lots of urban young people do not know anything about agriculture beyond the fact that maybe some of them should eat gluten-free roti. Some of them know that, hey, you know, aate ka daam ye hai, gehun ka daam ye hai. But like from very much from the top, where do you see the future of agriculture, farm forestry and fertilizers heading? How do you think it's going to change and what can India, how can India expect to consume agriculture or be in the agriculture industry, say 10 years from now?
Let me tell you, I see in next 5 year time, there will be a migration from cities to the villages.
Really?
Yes.
Was that?
Yes. This pollution.
Right.
This pollution level is going to make life very tough for people to live in city. Even parking at the car would be difficult. And these new roads and highways and tolls which are coming up and these fast trains which are coming around, you'll find slowly now in next 5 year time, the India will really go into the villages. And there I find then very close coordination between urban India and rural India. Practically rural and urban India will become same.
Yeah, sort of what we have like in Goa. I think Goa is a state that has sort of achieved that in a lot of ways.
Yes. It's fine here. I lived in Goa for 4 years.
Yeah?
Younger, when I built the Jowar Agrochemicals.
Okay.
From,
what part of Goa did you live in?
71 to 75. And that time Goa, I still remember, I was in a scooter. It was only, all around, only rice trees, very small roads, and open beach. I could see from my house, Sankwale Beach. We were on Sankwale Beach.
Okay.
And
where was that? Is that like Central Goa, North Goa, South Goa?
It's about next to airport.
Okay, next to airport. Daboli, so, Vasco da Gama.
Sankwal.
Yeah. Okay.
Daboli Airport is another hill, Sankwale Airport.
Okay.
So, it's, airport is on Daboli Hill. So, like that. But today it is different. So, it has all percolated to all the cities. Now you see people are running around Goa to buy. And when I was there, even 25 and up per square yard used to be land.
Yeah, now North Goa has some insane property rates. There's like renting out villas now.
Yes, that is saying. So, things change. And this is where going to happen. Very soon you'll find all these lands which you see the people will have to move out, and that is where our population will also disperse, and there will be jobs in there itself. More and more industries or cottage industries will come in these villages, and their electricity, their law and order situation will improve. All those things will happen because we are going towards that. When we are talking of becoming a number 3 economy in the world or $5 trillion economy in the world, and which is not very far off. The way country is moving, I do not see that this is far off. This is a reality which will happen. And you will find more and more talent. I mean, I find talent coming from far off places in sports, in entertainment, in cinemas, in OTTs, in television artists. I find a lot of things are coming up. So the things are changing in the world, in our country. The country is no more the country which people have been thinking. And since I have been living together, so I see the change. But if people have forgotten that what they think is still is 50s India, 60s India, or 80s India, no. Today is a different India. I've been going abroad since 43 years. And I went abroad 71. And today, Indians are respected.
That's true.
Anywhere we go, we're respected.
All of Silicon Valley is headed by Indians.
No, anywhere we go, you know, they think previously we're going to a shop, in a foreign shop in Hong Kong, anywhere, they used to watch whether we have come to buy something or we have come to lift something. Today, even if the salesperson rush to us, they think we are going to buy. And the majority of time, we buy.
Was the perception around Indians really that bad back in the day?
Yes. Back in the day, Indians were not treated well. It was very difficult to get visas into countries. And I have myself experienced that if we will, me and my wife will go to shop, I have experience, Hong Kong shop will go, that fellow is not interested to even talk about it, about anything, because they think we are not going to buy anything. We come to just to have window shopping or just to know what is this.
Oh, we have lower purchasing power, yeah. We've just somehow managed to go abroad.
Yes, this kind of impression people used to have, but today Indians are respected. We have investments, we do. I have plants in Senegal, I have plant in Oman, I have plant in Jordan. When I land there, you know, I am treated differently. I have investors' visa. I'm not a tourist visa. So different. See, Indians are no more those India, that India.
Yeah. And we're also telling the world who we are now, I think, more than ever. We've sort of woken up from our inferiority complex. Yes.
That is where, you know, surely it has shaken. People have got shaken up that it was not the same India.
Before we end, I still want to address the point where, you know, you said that people will move from cities to villages. we saw that, you know, Goa is one such model where most of Delhi and Bombay have sort of moved there and built villas and are now trying to live a life. And you know what my most of my friends in Goa say? They say there's no handyman in Goa. There's no services in Goa. So they're all forced to do wood cutting on their own, become electricians on their own. And we typically associate this behavior with Americans because Americans have self-reliance at the core of their values, right? Americans are used to telling your father to go fix this thing and he can do it. Here we have to call a plumber. So do you think the move from cities to villages is also going to foster this kind of self-reliance, this kind of direct engagement with food, with crops, with agriculture?
Food and crops, surely it will happen, but whether it will have direct, that I am not very sure that it will happen next 5 years or something. But next 10, 15 years, surely it could also happen. But then you may find a different kind of thing. We not immediate America because we have more people.
Mm-hmm.
You may find companies formed, say 4 or 5 villages, company mean when I say cooperative company, any of that kind
right.
of thing will be formed where jointly they will do all kind of services.
Mm-hmm.
You want a plumbing service, okay, you dial such and such. Plumbing, art, electrician, your repairer, all those things will be there and as a company. So company will, you can give a contract to him that my house maintenance is looked after by such and such.
Yeah, like could we see something like, for example, let's just say I am a photographer and I moved to the hinterlands of Haryana.
Yeah.
I could potentially start something with the village youth there and give photography services to other people in the area.
Yeah.
Are we going to see that?
Yeah, where that kind of thing will happen. And at the same time, you'll also give other services.
Mm.
So it'll become a service organization.
Mm.
So service organization will not remain limited to only cities. It will also go there because population will increase. And even today also, in large villages, there are service organizations. I see now a lot of parlors there. What is the parlor in a village?
It's rare to hear about that.
Yeah, in my own village where I have got education, then when we didn't do anything other than a bullock cart, I went and I saw the parlor. I saw now there is a Bayan Baja Barat type of thing. I went suddenly, I found a girl is selling few things, electronic items. So I asked her, I said, this is your father's or brother's shop, your own? No, sir, it is my shop. So, okay. So you are doing it? Yes, I am doing it. So that kind of awakening is coming. India is awakened. That's the most beautiful thing I find lately in last 10, 12 years.
You know, I'm really hopeful about this because every single day I wake up, I'm like, you know, Delhi's got everything, but I just hope the AQI got sorted. But if this is where we're heading, it's time to maybe pack up these cameras and, you know, start thinking about some place in hinterlands where it's just perfect enough and become one of the first people to go there and then form a community.
Yeah, but my advice to you, immediately buy some land there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not really far off when it will happen. And then the land prices will be very high.
Thank you for the real estate tip. I will definitely use that. But it was honestly an honor and a very fun experience speaking with you. You were very accessible, very approachable, and also humorous. Obviously, people can check out. Everyone knows what IFCO is, but if they were interested, they can, you know, search it up and see the various things that IFCO does. And I just want to say, Avastiji, thank you for your time. It was an honor.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Likewise.